Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Molly O'Neill, if you're listening right now, please re-email your cell phone. I lost it in the shuffle before the show. It's somewhere in my social media. I don't know. I was kind of suspended from Facebook for about 30 minutes today. I was really upset about that. The reason why, I think, is because I've been having a lot of people befriend me, so I've been in a very giving feeling very giving, so I've been trying to friend a lot of people that I have mutual friends with. And I don't know if somebody actually reported me or there was some kind of algorithm that they have. If you actually ask 10 people to be your friend in one day, that you might be some kind of a computer program. Well, Mark Zuckerberg, I'm not. My name is Jason Colucci. This is The Morning After. Follow me on Twitter, the Jason Colucci. Packed studio. Today, I have a couple of things. I want to thank Belinda Chang and Damon Wise for an amazing dinner Friday at the Monkey Bar. I sat at, I don't know if you have to reserve this thing or if you're like just industry or something, but so if you walk into the Monkey Bar through the main bar entrance and you go past the host stand, on the right there's what they call the service bar there, but there's two seats at the end of the service bar that to me are like a perfect kind of experience for that restaurant. Of course, sit down if you have a big group, but if it's just two of you in Midtown and you want to deal with all that fluff, just go sit at the bar there. They'll take really good care of you. Also want to announce the Morning After Awards are next week. All of the, we're honoring the food industry's top professionals. I'm still doing some last minute people that we are that are nominated. I wonder if Northern Spy Food Company is in there, or Terroir, or Per Se, Belinda Chang. She will be co-hosting with me. I'm really excited about that. That'll be next Sunday. The entire show, we will have no guests. We'll be honoring the top professionals, particularly in New York City. Sorry to all our friends in Munich, Germany. I've never been to the restaurant, so I can't really comment on it. Golden Globes tonight. Excited about that. Then I have a clip I'm going to play about Dronee Porrent that was on 60 Minutes very long ago. And I have a new app. I want to thank Ralph Cirillo from Geek Time on Howard Stern 101 for recommending me this app. It's J.J. Abrams' company, Bad Robot. If you go on my Facebook, you could see I there's this thing called Action Movie. There's an app where you can actually explode, like make things blow up. And I was at Prune on Friday after Monkey Bar and after about three other places. And I took a photograph or a video of of something that you want to explode. Me being the Prune kitchen, because it's an open kitchen, and you can make a missile shoots into the kitchen. You can actually see it. It's about a 6 second click, and it explodes. It's hilarious. So check that out. I want to thank everybody. I think we have Ken Friedman on the line. I want to go right into my first interview. Ken.
He's on now.
Ken.
Hi there.
First, I want to do my first thing I do with all my L.A. friends. I want to ask you the time and the weather in Los Angeles.
The time, let's see what the time is. The time here is, it's 12:03, so it's noon, and it's what it always is. It's 72 and funny.
I was at a monkey.
Every day.
I was at Monkey Bar the other day, and Belinda told me if you're sitting at that particular spot at the service bar, that there used to be the coffee machine there, and one of your recommendations was to move this espresso machine out of the way so you could see the dining room. Is that true?
I mean, the thing is, when you're sitting at that bar, you kind of want to look out, into the dining room, but you don't want to kind of be craning your neck. So if you have a mirror there, that's the dirty little secret about great bars. If there's a mirror, you can sit facing the mirror and you can see what's going on behind you. So
those are the little, no, and it's so true, those little details in restaurants that add up. But it's funny, and I'm sure everybody kind of has this question, but you were a music person before, and then you got into restaurants. I think your first venture was with Mario and Joe at the Spotted Pig. Is that kind of how it all went about?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't exactly with Mario and Joe. I mean, what happened was I was in the music business for a long time. Now, am I on the air now?
Yes, sir, you are.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, we hear you. You listened to Air Supply before in the background. I couldn't tell what it was.
I was trying to forget Air Supply. although I'm so old now, I kind of like them. They're kind of soothing. That's not a good sign. They're Australian, right? Or New Zealand or somewhere to play? I think Australian. Anyway, I was in the music business, and I was, you know, I turned 40, and I was kind of, I think probably now I can say I was having a bit of a midlife crisis, trying to figure out what to do with my life. And, you know, I mean, to make a long story short, opened the Spotted Pig. Mario was really my friend, my sort of chef, you know, successful chef friend in New York. So Mario, early on, said, you know, I'll help out. I'll help you, you know, not make the mistakes that first-time restaurateurs make. And later, when it started to kind of look like it was really going to be something for real, and Mario sort of said, you know, you should probably get Joe involved, too, because he's really good at this. He's been in the restaurant business his whole life. So I mean, Mario came later than Joe came, even later than, you know, I mean, Joe got involved after it was already open, but just to kind of, like, help me with you know, getting the right lawyer and how much not to pay for produce and stuff like that. Joe's really good at that stuff.
And now you have an amazing resume. I mean, is there so how did the relationship with April Bloomfield happen? I mean, was that just through the pig, and then you went to her afterwards and said, let's do a couple other places, or?
Yeah, I mean, when I sort of brought her over, you know, for some unknown reason, she listened to me and quit her job at the best restaurant in London, the River Cafe, and moved over to America and New York specifically to come work with me. And, you know, and I made her a partner from day one, to thank her for quitting her job and moving to this, you know, this music business guy who's having a midlife crisis, his new project. And also just because I think chef-owned restaurants are always better just because the chef cares that much more. And we just became a great partnership without really, I mean, I never knew her before. You know, we sort of hit the ground running and we just were great. I mean, she's a constant professional, and I'm not always the most professional, especially because I'm not, I wasn't really a restaurant guy. I mean, I worked in a few restaurants here and there for a little bit of time.
But you ate out all the time, so you kind of knew what worked and what didn't work in a sense, right? I mean,
I only knew then what I know now, which is I know as a customer what I like and don't like. I mean, I was a great customer for years, but I'm not a restaurant robot. I don't know all the kind of restaurant-y stuff, you know, and April, you know, had been working in restaurants as a real professional in, you know, the toughest job as a chef forever. So together we made a really great team. And so just kind of, I couldn't really imagine, I can't imagine doing projects without her. The few projects I do have without her are projects that she just passed on, didn't want to do because of, didn't think she was needed or just, you know, was busy with other stuff. So, but I never intend to do anything without her. I mean, she's just a great, we're a great partnership. We don't have to even talk about it. We just kind of fill in each other's blanks in a really great way.
Are you going to the Golden Globes tonight? Is that where you're in L.A.? I'm just, I don't know, throwing it out there.
No, hell no.
I mean, do you live out in L.A.?
I may go to the after party because Jeff Klein, one of my partners in the Monkey Bar, is throwing the after party in his hotel at the Sunset Tower. But I'm actually at Fred Siegel trying to buy a suit because he told me you can't go without wearing a suit. So I'm actually, like, kind of giving it a go. I mean, I can say this on the air, so it's sort of people know me are going to laugh that I'm actually going to buy a suit. But yeah, so I may go to the after party. I mean, he said to me, look, if you come to the after party, I'll introduce you to Jennifer Aniston. I said, you got to do better than that to try to entice me to go. So he's trying to think of someone better.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. If somebody can go on social media and follow Fred Siegel, we could retweet her that finding a suit. I don't know, E34 reg. I don't know what. Haven't seen you in a while. So
I'm big. I'm tall and long, and nothing ever fits me. That's part of my excuse for never wearing suits, and part of why my restaurants are so casual because I can never find suits that fit me.
So I got to do the corny restaurant thing for 1 second. I have a question for you. You're on a date or whoever you're out with, and you have to go to the Breslin, the Pig, and John Dory. You have one item at each of these restaurants throughout the night. Pick an item, pick a restaurant, pick a time. You know, you have an appetizer, John Dory, this. If you could do that, it'd be great.
I mean, I'd go to the John Dory, and I mean, obviously, if you're on a date, you want to get oysters for a bunch of different reasons, or at least one good reason. But you want to get the Carta de Musica, which is this amazing sandwich that April makes. I don't know if she invented it or not, but it's a really thin sandwich with Bottarga in it, which is, you know, which is Sardinia's most famous export. It's gray mullet roe. There's also tuna roe. But Bottarga is like it's dried roe that's often shaved on pasta and stuff as a kind of like salt substitute. So it's a really salty, beautiful sandwich that tastes great and makes you want to drink more, which is always good for a date. So that's one thing I would say. I mean the Breslin, I mean everything's so good there. I mean, I'd probably get a lamb burger there because it's just a great burger. You know, it's not your usual hamburger. It's you know, the French fries are great. Lamb goes with nice big fat juicy red wines, and Carlo's wine list at the Breslin is just a great wine list, especially in the winter. I mean, all the time, but in the winter, if you want like a nice groovy cocktail or a nice red wine to go with something, I'd get a lamb burger at the Breslin. I'd start with a bunch of bar snacks there, like pork rinds and
no. The cocktail list there is great too. I know. I mean, I go there pretty much around just going to hit the bar and have a quick cocktail.
Yep.
And then you'd hit the pig. What would you have at the pig?
I hit the pig. I mean, you know, a lot of women are vegetarian and eat vegetables. We call it the five sides of the pig. It's all the five side orders. It's the best vegetable plate in New York. It really is, and it's always based on whatever was fresh at the farmer's market, you know, that morning. So, you know, I'd get her the five sides, and I'd probably get. I'd get nudie because everyone loves nudie, and it's a great dish, and it just never fails to kind of amaze. And I'd get, I'd get whatever's written on the blackboard, you know, or mirror in the case of downstairs. I'd get whatever the special was at the pig, along with getting my date the five sides veg plate.
Well, there you go, people. That's exactly what you should order. And then if anyone wants to know, that's what we call it in the industry. We call it the pig. That's a spotted pig.
The pig, yeah.
And,
yeah, if you say the spotted pig, you're admitting that you're just not that cool.
Yeah, you mean you just were on Yelp or something. Ken Freeman, yeah. Thank you. Have a great time tonight. Please, I don't want to see you on TMZ tomorrow on Monday doing anything crazy. Or maybe so. But thanks again. I hope to talk to you soon. Once again, Ken Freeman, Morning After.
It's great. It's great talking to you, and I mean, like everyone, I aspire to be on TMZ, so hopefully you will see me on TMZ in some kind of embarrassing display.
Harvey, please, Harvey Levin, please, let's get him on. UB40, everyone's favorite song. Actually, if you didn't know this, Ken Freeman, I don't know what his... I think he was the manager of UB40 for however long. That's why we're playing that song. Oh, we're so cool here. I want to go into an actual... first, there's a story behind this. Christoph Hill is a friend now, but Christoph Hill is a co-owner of the Northern Spy Food Company. And
hello, Brooklyn.
hello, world. And he's also a friend. And one of my things when I started the show was I said I wanted to go through 3 months without having a repeat guest. Now we have a lot of people that call in and stuff like that. But me in particular, booking somebody, I didn't want to have anyone repeat for 3 months because then it becomes monotonous. You're hearing the same stuff, the same fluff, and then it becomes whatever. But you had just come up so much, and your restaurant.
The last episode was a little bit.
Yeah,
my ears were ringing. It was crazy.
It was too much. But I wanted to say thank you for coming in, and thank you for being the first repeat guest on The Morning After.
What an honor.
Who's doing your? Are you on? Is that you doing all that twittering?
That's me. I'm the tweet. I'm the tweet.
Do you?
I'm a prolific Twitter.
Are you so when you're doing all that tutoring, is it like on your phone or are you down in the basement?
I'm down usually in the office basement.
Okay. Because it ends. Sort of like, it usually ends around 7 o'clock.
When yeah, you're home. And then I get home, and then I might continue from home. You know, I kind of do it from everywhere.
And you're a new father. How's that treating you?
Terrific. Our kid, 4-month-old daughter, had her first crash to the floor yesterday off the kitchen table. My fault. My bad. It was a rough day, but turns out the kid's okay. So.
All right. So he didn't tweet about that.
No.
Follow at Child Services, please. That'd be great. But yeah, we had the Meatball Shop guys on, and Daniel Holtzman was on.
An old friend. I worked with Daniel back in 2001, 2002 at Campton Place Restaurant in San Francisco. That's where I first knew him.
And you guys, did you have some kind of interaction with SPQR A16?
Because
you
guys came on after I left A16. He came on to be on board, and then opened SPQR, and then left after that.
Now, as much as I hate doing this, there's a huge part of the last 5 years of New York City restaurants that's a lot to do with the influx of San Francisco chefs and stuff. Yeah. And I hate doing it. It's kind of like it came up and it was, you know, in media and stuff like that. But now it's sort of showing itself up with the second generation of people and restaurants that have lasted. And Daniel and Nate Appleman and yourself and Chris Baer at Brooklyn Lauder and Beth Ann Simkin. And there's just a lot of friends and stuff that are still around that had kind of come out of that school of thought. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I don't know why it happened. I mean, maybe it's, you know, like a lot of people traveled out here when Nate Appleman came out here. I'm not going to claim that I brought any sort of posse out here.
Well, no, there was an entire plane chartered
there
for
was,
those people.
Yeah, there was a Polino's plane. And it's, I think, you know, just like it's cyclical. Like some people were just like, you know what, I've done my San Francisco time. I'm going to come out here and do my New York thing for a while. And some of them have moved on. I mean, a couple of Polino's people are now back on the West Coast.
No, they're actually, I think they, Keith McNally called, Rich, he said, Richard Branson, hi, can you fly a Virgin Atlantic from San Francisco to LaGuardia? That'd be really cool. Yeah, thanks. And Richard Branson was like, sure. I think that's the conversation that took place.
It was exactly like that.
But no, Laura works from 86list.com. This is Northern, and I always mess this up. I always say Northern Spy, Northern Spy Food Company Incorporated, Northern Spy Food
Co. We just
call
it Northern Spy, or The Spy.
The Spy?
We're hoping to be
like Pig.
The Pig, we're going to be The Spy.
The Spy.
I'm pushing it. It's my marketing angle.
Have you taken my ideas that I gave you about doing delivery? Like more, like...
We do it.
But you were talking about like you do it in a very limited
way.
Yeah,
we're actually working on, we're going to try and get ourselves onto the High Line this year. That's our big project.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if they'll have us, we're going. So I'm scrambling to get that done by February 1st.
That's the garden in the sky, they call that.
That's right. It's a beautiful place. If we're going to be up there serving biscuits and sticky pork buns, I need very little more in the world.
But that's exciting. Is there what else is going on? I just wanted to have you here as a friend because you are all over Twitter. What's going on on Twitter? By the way, you're nominated for Morning After Award.
I am. Thank you very much for my Twitterness.
Restaurant of the year.
Oh,
100%.
Brilliant.
Because the idea was they were like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to pick per se, Danielle. And then the Academy, the Oscars, they were nominating, they nominated about 8 to 12 films out. And the idea was, you know, we need to have El Postino as well as The Inception.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
We need to have both of those categories. We can't just have 5 movies.
Right.
And the idea was the Northern Spy Food Company.
So you're going like pop and top.
Yeah, right. It's just as important as another, you know, 4-star in Midtown.
Of course we are.
So I agree, but you know the public needs to hear these things.
They do.
The morning afterwards, you are nominated next week. The show will air at 3 o'clock. My co-host, Belinda.
Anything
Chen.
I can do to help promote myself, I will.
Yeah, 100%. We know if you follow me on Twitter, we know that. No, but on Twitter, like you're on that a lot. Is there any interesting stuff in trends that have happened? Because I've been out of the loop for about a month and a half.
You know, Twitter is, it's like, I mean, my buddy Zach Cohen, who does like social media stuff, he kind of called it, it's like, you're not there to measure if you're getting a return on investment. You know, I don't know if anybody comes to my restaurant because of what I say on Twitter. I'm naturally a pretty verbal guy. I like to write. I like to read. I like to say funny things occasionally. So it's a perfect, it's like Twitter was, I didn't think I'd be that into it, but it was kind of made for me. It's like.
And you're an East Coast guy.
I am born and raised Connecticut. I'm a nutmegger.
I'm actually, you're here now, and I was going to play this clip later on in the show, but Drew Neaporant, one of my mentors, I Google people throughout the week and go on YouTube and see if there's any new video footage of them. And Andy Rooney, and this is interesting, this is not in the context of being about Drew Neaporant. He did this about Drew, I think, after he got success from the Matriche. And Andy Rooney did a little shtick about him, about restaurateurs getting too big. And it's cool about Drew, but it's true now, 20 years later. Here we go, Andy Rooney on restaurateur Drew Neaporant. You ever notice? All right, here we go.
I'm pleased for Drew getting this award, but I've seen it happen so often. A bright, ambitious young man works for a while in lowly jobs at restaurants, accumulates enough money to open a small place of his own. It's a hit. People flock to it, and he builds up a loyal clientele. Overwhelmed by his success, he tears down the wall between his little restaurant and the place next door and expands. The restaurant coasts on its reputation for a while. Zagat forgets to revise its review downward. He decides it still isn't big enough, so he moves to more expensive real estate uptown and feels he can run two restaurants at the same time. So he moves the chef uptown, hires a cook for downtown, and keeps both places open. You all know what happens next. The chef leaves, people stop flocking, the bank forecloses, he gets bad reviews, goes out of business. Starts all over as a head waiter somewhere until he gets together enough money to start a nice little place downtown again. I'm pleased for Drew about this award and everything, but I'm awfully worried. For one thing, he doesn't have the build for a head waiter.
Wow, Andy Rooney, God bless his soul, American
classic.
That is classic.
Very weird.
Talking about Drew Neaporant. And it's weird because you realize how dated it is because they bring up Zagat. You ever know what I said? We're not talking about Zagat. Yeah, you know, Drew opened up a little restaurant. But I saw this morning, and it hasn't been on that long because there's only 39 views. 39 of them have been me. We're going to go into Laura Wirtz, 86list.com. Laura Wirtz. Are you there? Laura Wirtz, hot job of the week. Go ahead with the hot job of the week, Laura Wirtz.
Hi, Jason. How you doing?
Oh, very well, very well.
This week's hot job comes from Prime Meats. Prime Meats is a German steakhouse in Carroll Gardens, well known for its service and cocktails. And they're looking for a host or hostess. Somebody with a great attitude, somebody with nice phone etiquette, and who can greet customers with a smile.
Really?
Yes.
Who did I see was out there last night? Oh, Natasha David, bartender at Maison Premier. Somebody on social media tweet at Maison Premier at Natasha David. She was here last night. I think it was her birthday. I'm sure she had a really good time. But that's an amazing, just a fun place. And are they doing the catering for your wedding?
Yes, they are. We actually were just meeting with them this week about it. So,
and I will be attending this wedding. And can I choose the lamb, the salmon, or the Chateaubriand right now? Can I pick out what I want?
Well, you know, we're kind of thinking family style, but we'll see. We haven't made that official decision yet.
Okay, and you're not seating me near the bathrooms. I want it to be in between the bathrooms and the dance floor, right?
You're the pickiest wedding guest I have yet.
And next to Chef Tony Liu, the chef at Mirandi and Polina's. I want to sit next to him and his wife.
I think he might be worse than my mother and my grandmother combined, Jason.
No, well, yes, you're one of the people that brought up Northern Spy.
Thank you very much.
Right.
The Spy.
Oh so, yeah, like
this
I
much
said last week, it's definitely one of my favorite restaurants.
And what'd you have last time? Or what did one of the? Why do you like to go there? I guess is the bigger question.
Why I like to go there? I like to go there because of the atmosphere and the just, like, really comforting, delicious, fresh, seasonal food. It's a really nice place to have dinner and relax and feel like you're going to be taken care of.
And you know there's a new chef there.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going to have to get in there again sometime soon.
Can you mispronounce his name 20 times on last show? Can you say his name?
Hadley Schmidt. The great Hadley Schmidt. He's a self-taught polymath from Colorado. Amazing guy.
Laura Wirtz.
Great, a Colorado guy. That's great.
Laura Wirtz, thank you for the Franks and their new job. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Ariane Degan from D'Artagnan. This is The Morning After.
following program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery. Kane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.kane5.com.
We're back. We're back. That was Iggy Dean with actually my favorite song, and I'm not even lying because I say that, you know, I embellish a lot on this show sometimes, but I was listening to Bang Bang Song, Bang Bang Sun, all the time, and I think that was, if you do the research, he was at some planetarium and learning about the meaning of life throughout the universe, and she wrote that song. You know, honestly, I can't understand most of the lyrics on it, but I like the song. I listened to it about 20 times walking in Park Slope. I'm going to go into my next guest, Ariane Degon from D'Artagnan Foods. Ariane, are you there?
Hello, yes, I am.
I am so happy to do this interview because, first of all, I'm a Staten Island Francophile, which is, you know, I'm sort of, I can't even describe how out of the box that is. But first of all, I want to thank you for being a huge part of making French food in America, along with Danielle, Eric Repair, and of course under the tutelage of Jean-Louis Paladin, mainstay in all of our supermarkets and of course in our restaurants. And you guys have been in business for a long time. Where do you see D'Artagnan Foods right now?
Where do I see my company right
now?
Yeah,
like in terms of its imprint. Because when I came up, it was mostly in restaurants, and then I was walking down to
No, actually, you're catching me today in San Francisco at the food show, and it's mostly a retail food show, not really a restaurant food show. So we're going in that direction. But to come back to what you were saying, I think it's not so far-fetched to be a Francophile in Staten Island because you're right. You have the view on the Statue of Liberty right there every day, you know?
Oh, yeah, you guys gave that to us. Thank you.
I'm here in California and of course, trying to develop our retail business in specialty stores. We also have a little website that's growing nicely right now, and that I'm very, very proud of.
Can you spell that for all of our listeners? Can you say what the name of it is and spell it?
Yes, it's www.dartagnan.com, and D'Artagnan is all attached. It's a little bit like the Musketeer, but without the apostrophe. That's D-A-R-T-A-G-N-A-N.
And this is a great tool for people that are at home that want to do some more of a, you know, they can do the mainstays, but they also can go into the game world of food where they normally wouldn't happen. And the thing is, I want to demystify any kind of thing, is most, I would say probably 99 or 95% of these birds are coming from American farms, or, you know, maybe the thing is off, but
yes,
that's your focus.
It makes sense for us to stay as local as possible. And so we source the best products possible, but we also encourage farmers around us to do it. That way it's saved on transportation and it makes more sense anyway. But some things we can, some things we can't, and we have to bring, like wild game birds we bring from Scotland. But there is a cooperative who works exclusively for us in Missouri, in the Ozark Mountains. And there are 17 farmers there that grow Berkshire pork, again, just for us. So the organic chicken, the guinea hens, all the ducks. We have a new duck, Rohan duck. Any specialty food that has no hormones, no antibiotics, and that is naturally raised, we try to source from the United States.
Which is great, because a lot of people that are getting into food now don't realize that a lot of that local war movement came into the roots of French chefs like Danielle and French foundation companies like D'Artagnan that decided to make a decision in the late 90s, you know, by sort of taking the techniques, European techniques, and applying them here and with American farmers working together. You know, a lot of American chefs that are doing that now, like Thomas Keller, had foundations in French cooking. So it kind of, you know, it did a majority of it, I'll vouch, came from that background, and that's great. But now it's sort of, 10 years ago, people were saying you're crazy, but now it's sort of all over the TV.
Totally. I mean, before we heard the words local and sustainable in the same sentence than meat or ingredients for a restaurant, Jean-Louis Paladin, who was a pioneer in that, he came from Gascony, from my part of France. He was an extremely genius chef, and all that was important for him, like it has always been for us at D'Artagnan, is that the ingredient be the best possible. And for the ingredients to be the best possible, they have to be the freshest, and they have to be raised for animals. They have to be raised the right way. So it's very, it's a selfish mode where we want the best. And so because we want the best, we want it as close as possible to home, to be the freshest and well-raised.
Well, Ariane, I wanted to thank you, and I'm actually going off my memory. I don't have Google in front of me. I want to go off the wholesale number. It's probably wrong, but is it 914-62? What is the wholesale?
No. It's the same line. It's the 1-800.
9 and 8.
D'Artagnan. If you dial 1-800 D'Artagnan, you get on the wholesale line as well. It's 1-800-327-8240.
There we go. Ariane, thank you for taking the time out. Ariane Dagan from D'Artagnan calling in.
Pleasure.
Please, when you're back in New York, come into studio.
With great pleasure, and I love Roberta. So.
Perfect. We'll come in. We're not going to go into break now. We're going to. I have a friend in studio, Jonathan Crawley. We're going to go right into his interview. Johnny.
Hey.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
First of all, I have to say this on behalf of myself. Ariane, I've worked with D'Artagnan. You kind of like go back and forth with them as a company in terms of the wholesale market. You can buy from them. They have mushrooms and stuff. But it's true. She comes from a huge food background that comes out of France, and she came into the States. And D'Artagnan's been around for 25 years. And as much as you may play off, like I was laughing about being in the Staten Island kid that's a Francophile because, there's all ideologues of like stuff about the French and stuff like that, but the truth is a lot of this local stuff comes out of the roots of a lot of the French chefs. I know that has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk to you about, Johnny.
Everything. We really do.
But thank you for well, first of all, I like to apologize for misspelling your name on every email that we send out.
Everyone. It really hurts every time too.
And you are the author of The Morning After Score.
I am.
You're working on the new
longest running.
We're doing a new TV show called Corporate Pie, and we're shooting it right now, actually. Don't look at the camera. And you're writing a score for that, right?
Yes, I've been meditating on it, and I think it's going to be probably Grammy award-winning.
No, I mean...
Emmy, I guess.
We talked about this. I said it needs to have some kind of a repetitive kind of thing to it, so we could start at the beginning, about 15 seconds, and play it in between each kind of scene.
Exactly. Right? We're going for Larry Sanders.
Oh, don't tell everybody. Well, Steve Jobs says great artists borrow, good artists borrow, great artists steal. So we're really doing that. But you're in studio. You're gonna like just hang out for a little while when we go into our next couple of guests. We're going to take a break now, the morning after. We're going to come back, and we're going to take a break. We got the music queued up here. This is awesome. Justin Leon, sommelier at Tantris Restaurant.
Guten Tag. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, I got the number here. This is, we have for I know we're not doing it right now, but I have a number. We're gonna pass this over. We're back. Justin in studio. Justin, how do you pronounce your last name?
Leone.
Oh, Leone. Justin G. Leone, yep. the sommelier, as the sommelier from Marco Foggione taught me how to say properly last week, even though I was saying it properly, but for all of our listeners in Staten Island. and you work at a restaurant called Tantris Restaurant.
Tantris, yes.
Tantris. And
that sounds very exotic.
It's a
it
little
is. It's in
erotic, even.
It's, yes. I was going to make that joke, that? And I didn't want to be that because I, you know, Jesse Kiefer, the producer of The Morning After, she emailed me about you coming into the studio, and I did some research on you, and I was looking, I was like, oh no, I don't know if I could deal with some pompous from Europe on a Sunday, and then I met you before the show, and you're an amazing. I mean, you're just an amazing individual.
No, you can say it. I'm pretty amazing. Yeah.
You are, totally. I mean, just for the fact that the you know, dealing with you know, day to day, kind of on the floor, and German is your second or third language, I'm assuming.
Well, I didn't speak a lick beforehand,
yes.
But you know, necessity is the mother of invention, as we say, and it's cool, man, because German's a crazy hard language, but you know, you do what you got to do, and the people are just so they're always so flattered that there's this punk American kid who's somehow interested in their culture and their language, and fumbling through my grammar at their table, they're just like, "Ooh, keep talking."
The first thing I noticed when I was on the website, and I know it's changed a little bit because some people have gotten married and stuff like that, was when I went on the sommelier page, there was three people, and I remembered I had a gentleman, my best friend Mark Trumpor's brother, live with me for about 6 months. His name is Louis Trumpor, and he owns two bars in Berlin. One of them's called 8mm and the other one's called Next. And he, you know, he was telling me about his labor model, and the labor model is obviously different, you know, it's a country and stuff like that. So is being an American and going over there, is it different, and not necessarily tip out and stuff, but can you have more talent on staff because it's more sort of quote subsidized or not?
It's actually more difficult in Europe by far. I was in London for 6 months. And I really saw how difficult it can be, because in a place like that, if you're working in a restaurant, the average wealthy clientele is wondering, well, I guess you failed out of business school, so now you're at a restaurant, you know?
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's pretty brutal. And then here in the States, it's a matter of prestige. It's like, I'm working for a rock star chef. You can really, people respect, you know, the heck out of you. And you can really be almost like a local celebrity if you're great at your job and you work at a great place. And it's very profitable. In Europe, you can't always say that. And so, Germany is one of the few countries, like Spain as well, who really love and respect their restaurant culture. And they, while it's not quite as celebrity as maybe in the States, it's in the ballpark.
But Munich is a lot of the sort of American ideas of Germans comes out of Munich, because there was a big occupation post-World War II with American soldiers and stuff.
And there's the whole Oktoberfest thing.
Yeah, so the idea is, like they say, Munich is sort of like the Texas of Germany in a sense.
That's right, man. Bavaria is down home. Tell you what. It is, man. It's different dialect, different mentality, different everything. And it's very American friendly. They really love America. It's kind of cool to be an American there because you're accepted, and it's almost novelty, but not in a shallow way. Because it is they understand how difficult it is to come to their country cold and learn everything from scratch. And they really are tickled pink by it, so it's really cool, man. And Tantris, you know, was the first Michelin 3-star restaurant in Germany. It was the first fine dining restaurant in Germany.
Oh, so you are. I wasn't going to say that because I wasn't sure if you're going to say yes or no. But it is a Michelin star.
We were three for 20 years, and then when Chef Witzigmann left, of course, they always take a star away. And we're
Hans. What's his
Hans
name?
Haas Hans now, Haas. And we're huge. I mean, we're a 130 seat.
Wow.
Two Michelin star restaurant, which
you
is
have two, you have
unheard
a lunch
of.
Seat. Don't you have an early seating?
Yeah, we have two full services a day. So we can do about 250 covers easily in a day.
Actually, I have a lot of young gentlemen that listen to the show. They're in school, and they always ask me about you know, going out there. What are some of the things that you did to set yourself up to get a job out? And I mean, without going into the whole paperwork aspect of it,
no.
Is there a way to kind of, is maybe Germany is the entry point into getting to Europe to have a job?
Yeah, I mean, it's the most English-friendly country. as well. They're very good at it, and they really actually enjoy speaking it with you. But I met the owner because he loved dining at Alinea when I worked there, and so I would always wait on him. And then
why are we not talking about that? I'm kidding.
And so being, I would say to young people, if you work at a great restaurant like any of the ones that I dined at while I was here in New York this week, you know, 11 Madison Park, one of my absolute favorites, Danielle, Jean-Georges.
Terroir, you're at Terroir?
Terroir, of course, as well.
Which is nominated?
Yes. Congratulations. It deserves it. Then you have a platform to meet incredible restaurateurs, chefs, and sommeliers every night. And as long as you're outgoing and cool, you know, maybe an opportunity will present itself. And if it comes, take it.
And you are you have your sort of itinerary here. You're going to go and get on a Virgin Atlantic flight, first class, and drink some champagne on the way home?
Yeah, probably a few bottles.
So you're heading back east, if you will.
Yes, to their Vaterland. That sounds
when,
evil, doesn't
when
it?
When do you guys, I mean, it just sounds sort of retarded, but I love little stuff like this is like, and this probably comes from the French or Italian sort of ideas, but you have a lineup and stuff like that. Like all the same kind of rules apply. I mean, I know we stole that from you guys, but as Americans, we like to think we came up with the idea. But you have the same kind of thing as a family meal and stuff.
Yeah,
like that. I love hearing stuff.
And
like
it's
that.
The one thing that is different, I have to say, is in America we wake up, we have our coffee, we have our eggs, we have something sweet, pancakes or whatever. Here it's like 10 in the morning. You're sitting in a Stubel, and there's an 80-year-old lady beside you just hacking away at a pork shoulder, you know, and like down in Bruce, and it's like, that's hot.
Well, you're going to hang out in studio till the end of the show. We're actually got about five or 8 minutes, so we're gonna giving Jack a heart attack. We're going to go into Molly O'Neill, who's on the line. Molly.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I know we've been kind of going back and forth like an old, you know, we're on Ancestry.com or something. But I apologize. I sent your thing to my archive and in the cloud. It's in the cloud right now, so I needed to get your number again. That being said, this American Burger is this entirely on iBooks? Like, is this entirely online, this book?
It's an e-book. It's only in the cloud, Jason. It's up there with my phone number.
I downloaded it about 2 or 3 days ago after I said that I had downloaded it because I wasn't sure if you could see who actually downloaded it. And I was like, oh, wait, maybe I should definitely download it because I got the sample. But then I downloaded the whole thing and I went through it. And I have to say, on the idea of ebooks, it's a great outlet for authors who are looking to sort of get a message out there without having to go to a editor and have to pitch a huge idea for a book and putting out there. Because there's a lot of great information in it. But, you know, now if you pitch that book in print, it would never happen, no?
Well, I mean, what works as an ebook doesn't necessarily work as a print book.
This
was a book that was... It was imagined as an ebook. It was built to be an ebook, and it wouldn't. I wouldn't really like it as a print book, though. I mean, I think there's a lot of room for print books about hamburgers. There's just a lot of room to talk about hamburgers in America, but this particular book really works best, you know, on an iPad, you know, on the back porch or wherever you are. Making a hamburger.
Well, how much did you have to bribe Mark Pastore and Pat LaFrieda to get that the Pat LaFrieda burger mix?
Not at all. I didn't have to bribe at all. You know, it was really painless.
That's the first burger in the book, and that's the one thing I noticed. And I like the concept of it because you can kind of like everyone makes burgers, and it's one of those things where, you know, it can kind of become mundane over time, but you could hop into this book and just simple ingredients you probably have in the fridge, switch it up a little bit. Was that the idea a little bit?
Yeah. It was just to make people, you know, to help, you know, people become more conscious of the ingredients that we're using it and how to use them. I mean, I learned a ton just researching this and talking to people about burgers. You know, I've been going around the country for 10 years collecting food stories and recipes, and burgers are something people are really passionate about. And why? I mean, how much variety can there be in a burger? Well, the truth is there can be a heck of a lot. And, you know, I grew up in the Midwest where you wanted a perfectly symmetrical, round burger. And, in fact, that's the enemy of a great burger. You know, a great burger kind of has a free form because you don't want to mush it down. You just, you know, you want to keep the meat really loose and undense. And so it comes off the out of the skillet, which, I mean, I personally think a skillet's a burger's best friend, and not a grill.
That's how Minetta Tavern does their Black Label burger. But Christoph Hill from Noah's by Food Company would like to ask you a question.
Hi, Molly.
Sure.
I have been curious about the burger explosion in New York City, which I assume is happening in other cities. I mean, everybody seems to be opening a burger joint, and there's tons of burger mini chains. And what do you ascribe that to, the movement towards back towards the burger? I mean, we were already a nation of burger eaters, and now it's like, now it's just blowing up. What's that all about?
I am not sure. I mean, part of it certainly started as the kind of second label restaurant syndrome. You know, people who had very well-established top-of-the-line restaurants opening, you know, going from couture to ready-made, you know. So you have Madison, you know, 11 Madison, and you have Shake Shack. And, you know, as soon as you get a restaurateur like Danny Meyer focusing his talent, you're going to come up with a pretty extraordinary burger. And I think part of it was that. Part of it is the same thing that's bringing us an explosion of food trucks around America. You know, that people
are looking
to eat more cheaply when they go out. People are looking for one great thing. And, you know, then saving their money for the, you know, over-the-top meal. So I think there's a little of that going on. And you know, a little bit of the taking back of raising great pasture-fed beef. But I don't know. I mean, I guess we're always just we're a nation of suckers for burgers. I mean, what do you think?
No, it's hard to get you kind of like nail it down. I mean, it could be a million different you know, theories in terms of the hamburgers. It's such a huge subject. But if somebody wanted to, now I went on online and went out right on iBooks and typed it in. But is that basically, like, in terms of people that don't have, you know, Apple products or something, is there a way to get through Amazon? What's the best way to get
this? American Burgers on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's everywhere. It's an e-book, so you can get it any place where you can purchase an e-book.
Well, Molly,
I'd
like to thank you for your friendship on Facebook, and thank you for actually getting me through this, for actually sitting down and reading my first book on my iPad. I'd love for you to come into studio, into Roberta's, when you get into town. We're going to go into our next interview, but Molly, we'll talk soon. Everyone in studio right now, thank you for your time. Everybody chime in, please, starting with Christoph Hill.
Hey, thanks very much. Happy to be here a second time.
Christoph, first of all, you're a friend of the show now.
Anytime, am I the new Baba Booey or something?
No, that would be Jesse in theory. You're more of the, I'm trying to think of the Baba Booey, who is the... You're Mike Alan King or something. I'm trying to think of like an old reference for people, but
Andy Richter maybe.
Andy Richter, of course.
Yes.
Young man.
It's a good fit. Yes. Hi.
Tetris, how would we? How do we get in touch with you? I want to follow you on Twitter. What's up?
Yeah. I actually don't know how to tweet. Maybe we can talk after.
We're beating the Germans in something. Yes!
Ich bin ein Twitter.
We are very efficient, but not me. Shows how not German I am, yeah. But you can, of course, come by the restaurant, please. But visit the website. Check us out. It's going to be under construction soon to make it a little bit more updated. But also, I'm doing a really cool project I should plug real quick.
Please,
so you can 100%. See me and all and other very cool New York and nationwide personalities. It's called www.imbibeandinspire.com. Okay. A former coworker of mine made this sort of lifestyle website, and it just shows, like Will Gadara, for example, was one of the recent ones.
Awesome.
It's a really cool site, and come and see some of the New York and other cats.
Next time you're in town, you're on the show. Please hop in.
I'll bring some schnitzel next time.
Please. Johnny?
What's my last name again?
Crowley.
All right. God, finally. Well, one of these days.
Thank you for one, quote-unquote, licensing your...
I know.
And also working on the new thing, which we're actually going to shoot a couple of segments after this.
Nice.
Everyone, if you want to hear my mundane ideas, follow me on Twitter, the Jason Colucci, JSONCOLUCCI, prefixed by the. Facebook. Next week, the Morning After Awards, restaurants, personalities, restaurateurs, chefs, sous chefs, purveyors will all be rewarded for all their hard work in 2011.
Sommeliers or no?
Sommeliers as well.
Okay.
Sorry, I forgot. I always forget about those guys because they always want to remember themselves. This is The Morning After. I am Jason Colucci. Thank you, everybody, for coming in studio. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.